Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. He has been keeping an eye on maneuvering here. We actually, despite the fact all the attention's been on the debate, and we will get to that, there's actually a federal budget due here in a couple of weeks. A lot of maneuvering there. Scott has the details. Scott, good to have you here.
Always great to be with you, Loman. Thanks for having me back.
You are on Capitol Hill today, where Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has pulled a continuing resolution down. What is actually happening here? Are we going to have a continuing resolution? Certainly, I doubt we're going to have any sort of an actual budget.
The appropriations process has been broken for 20 years, and Congress has been usually funded through these omnibus appropriation bills and continuing resolutions. So you might recall that at the end of 2023, we did an omnibus appropriation, and it basically set higher levels of federal spending and increased our burden when it comes to national debt and deficits. And so that spending is scheduled to expire on September 30th. And if you do nothing, then you have what's known as a federal shutdown or a partial shutdown of essential unessential services in the federal government. So you could see national parks closed. You could see, longer lines at the TSA. There's a lot of different political maneuvering that always happens during a shutdown. And so in order to stave that off and make sure that we don't have a shutdown, you need to pass either your appropriation bills to fund those different agencies and departments in the federal government, or you need to pass what's known as a continuing resolution that funds the federal government at those current levels. Well, for some of those House Republicans this week, funding 6 months of an omnibus that would continue from last year was an unacceptable posture. On the other hand, Mike Johnson and some of the House conservatives were really pushing for the SAVE Act to be included in the CR. And the SAVE Act is legislation that would have required proof of U.S. citizenship at registration in order to vote. And so it's, about election integrity and making sure that effectively illegal aliens aren't permitted to vote in the 2024 election. And so Mike Johnson had the conference meeting, talked through it with members, and he was just a little bit short with the votes. So he pulled that bill down this week and has said that the conversations will be ongoing between the House leadership and its members that are sort of holding out in order to develop some consensus. So, it'd be interesting to see if Mike Johnson was able to sort of consolidate a consensus based around lower spending levels. Because on one hand, some of these defense hawks want to spend as much money as we can on our national security and national defense, while the fiscal hawks are like, hey, a 1% cut is almost nothing. Why don't we start there? And I think that's one of the pieces of the conversation that's ongoing. And so the United States Senate is likely to draft its own legislation, which would create a 3-month continuing resolution and fund government probably until Christmas, because they want to create that political appetite for all these anomalies to be funded in a lame duck session, special interest favors for K Street, and so forth. That's a big, big problem. And I think that's why you see the House Republicans in our majority really advocating for a 6-month CR. What's going to happen over the next few weeks will be, I think, a really difficult negotiation, just given the majorities that are at stake. And I could also see some patchwork being done where they do, a 3-week CR or a 1-month CR. But the complicating factor with that is that if they don't fund government, they can't leave Washington. And you've got a lot of House Republicans that are nervous about their own reelection, and same thing for the Democrats. And I think that that's likely to expedite some sort of an agreement where government does not shut down and these folks can concentrate on either helping President Trump or Kamala Harris with the presidential races, serving as surrogates, traveling all over the country, and then also focusing on their own reelection efforts.
Speaking of President Trump and Kamala Harris, of course, we had what may be the one and only presidential debate. We'll see whether or not another one materializes here. So I would be remiss, Scott, if I didn't ask for your thoughts on the debate, particularly as it relates to policy.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think that Trump's policies are a lot of what people like about him. We know that we were better off 4 years ago than we are today. Inflation is totaled up over 20%, and that's a massive burden on families, and especially large families like mine. And, you know, Trump basically outlined his vision for getting us back to a Trump economy that is fostering an environment of innovation and growth, and that's mostly through deregulation and tax cuts. The Trump tax cuts expire in 2025. Kamala Harris, with the tax increases that she's proposing by supporting the Biden budget, and on top of that, you know, having like a wealth tax and taxing unrealized capital gains, that's a $7 trillion tax increase. It would by far be the largest tax increase in our nation's history. And so there's a real difference between the candidates when it comes to their handling of the economy. Of course, the Biden regime has been manipulating data, and they want to say that they've created more jobs than any administration in our nation's history. And the fact of the matter is that those were jobs that went away during COVID, and ultimately through the shutdown, draconian policies that our nation faced during a terrible time. And they've done nothing really to foster an environment of economic activity that increases productivity and increases wages and really has those macroeconomic growth effects that we need to see to really improve the middle class. And, you know, Trump has talked a lot about the deregulation success that he had as president of the United States when, you know, they basically cut 10 or 11 regulations for every new regulation that they had to promulgate. And ultimately, when you have a smaller government that allows people to be free and to innovate and to invest and reinvest, that's going to give you the kind of growth that I think will improve the lives of all people in all communities. And there was data that came out following the debate that I think came from the New York Times and Reuters. And it said that people trust Donald Trump on the economy more than they trust Kamala Harris. And digging in deeper, Lohman, people that are undecided, not independent, not Republican, not Democrat, but people that were termed undecided believe that Donald Trump will do a better job handling the economy as well. The economy is the number one issue in America. Illegal immigration is number two. And the Democrats want to try to make this about other issues like January 6th or abortion. And I think that the American people are smarter than that. They're going to vote in the best interest of their pocketbook, and we're going to vote to reelect Donald Trump in November.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, a few words about the club, please.
The Club for Growth is a membership organization based out of Washington, D.C. We're united in those ideas of economic freedom and liberty and opportunity. If you want to check us out, visit clubforgrowth.org. And let me give a shout out to my friends Bernie and Janie listening today.
Sounds good there, Scott. Appreciate it. Live from Capitol Hill, Scott Parkinson from the Club for Growth. Scott, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.